Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Imagine most advanced medical humanity possible. Brilliant surgeons, astonishing technology, machines that can do what once was imaginable just a few years ago. And now imagine that in the middle of all that breathtaking progress, the most important thing of all is quietly slipping away. The human touch, the kindness, the comfort, the hand on your shoulder that says you are not alone in this. Today's guest is one of the most accomplished pediatric brain surgeons in the country. He has spent 4 decades operating on children. His message after all of it is not about technology at all. It's about the forgotten art of being human and why it may be the most powerful medicine that we have. It is a true honor to welcome my guest today, Dr. Alan R. Cohen. He is the chief of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Children's Hospital and a professor at neurosurgery, oncology, and pediatrics at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He has spent 4 decades operating on children with brain tumors and has held some of the most distinguished positions in American medicine at Johns Hopkins, at Boston Children's Hospital, and at Harvard. And he is the author of a beautiful new book called Comfort Always, Healing in the Age of Technology. Dr. Cohen, welcome to the show. It is an honor to have you here.
Stacy, thank you for that very kind introduction. In the words of Paul Simon, you could call me Al, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you very much. And I just love what we're going to talk about today. You know, Dr. Cohen, your book's title comes from a beautiful old phrase in medicine: to cure sometimes, to relieve often, to comfort always. What does that phrase mean to you? And why did you build an entire book around that final part, comfort always?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And as you mentioned, I've been doing this pediatric neurosurgery thing for 4 decades, and this is an attempt to showcase some of the patient stories that I've had over the years, very interesting, gripping stories about the forgotten art of healing in this modern age of technology. And I chose the title from a story of a guy named Edward Livingston Trudeau I'd read about. He was in the 1870s in New York City, and his older brother, James, developed pulmonary tuberculosis in an age where there was no treatment. And wow. Trudeau cared for his brother, who died. And then he entered Columbia Medical School, and he himself developed TB. And there was no treatment for the disease. And so he went to upstate New York, to the Adirondack Mountains, and for the cold air and fresh food. And he survived, and he got better, and he opened a sanatorium there where patients would flock to him for his compassionate care because there was no medication that was available. And when he died in 1915, he had 1,200 of his patients got together and collected $7,500, and they commissioned a statue for him, which still stands there in Saranac Lake in the Adirondacks. And on that statue, bronze on marble, is the inscription, "Guerir quelquefois, soulager souvent, consoler toujours," which translates, as you said, to cure sometimes, to relieve often, to comfort always. And I think that is the message that we tend to forget in this modern age of technology. That's what I chose to remind the population about that.
I love that. I love that. You know, we need more doctors like yourself, you know, in society. I mentioned that to you earlier. It is so important to show care towards the patient. And sometimes, you know, doctors treat, but they forget that the patient needs that comfort. Like you said, just a hand on the shoulder or just a comforting phrase of words can mean the world to another human being.
Sometimes some of the simplest things we do, adjusting the patient's covers or pillow, are the things that get remembered. And what happens now technology allows us to do some things that we couldn't do even at the beginning of my career. And we have MRI scans and positron scans and intraoperative imaging and neurophysiological monitoring, and allows us to do things and save patients that we couldn't save even decades ago. But if not managed appropriately, this technology can drive a wedge between the doctor and the patient and the family. And that's what the book is, to remind people about the forgotten art of healing, the humanity in medicine, the simple things that everybody knows, like kindness and empathy, compassion. And it's things that we always know. But if we don't remember them at the bedside, we're doing a disservice to the patient and the family.
I agree. And after four decades, you know, in one of the most demanding fields of all medicine, why is comfort the word that you chose to leave with people?
My particular specialty in pediatric neurosurgery is childhood brain tumors. And that's still a tough problem. Brain tumors are the number one cause of cancer death in kids. And one of the most difficult things that I do in my job is to tell a parent, "I'm sorry to give you this news, but your child has a brain tumor." It changes the life of the patient, the family, and everybody. And it's a devastating diagnosis to make. But we can do things now. We can comfort and we can cure many times. And when we can't cure, we can prolong life. And I think it's important to remember that part of being a doctor is healing, is comforting. Some of the simple things, optimism, controlled optimism, I think it is a mandate for the physician and the surgeon. This is to remind people about that.
I love that. Now, your central message is a striking one, you know, that as medicine has grown more in technology, you know, it has advanced, something essential has quietly been lost. Like, help us understand that. You've spent your career using some of the most sophisticated technology in medicine. So this isn't anti-technology.
Well, one of the things that we have now that we didn't have when I started was the electronic health record. And this enables us to chart medications and the histories and exams and consultations and patients and send them around the world. It's a major advance, but it's also a cause of burnout for many physicians and surgeons who work late in the night doing charting and coding. And we live now in an era of the business of medicine, where a doctor is a care provider and the patient is a client. And that's the business of medicine. And we've forgotten that there's a doctor-patient-family relationship. About 1,000 years ago, there was a guy, Moses Maimonides, who famously said he was a rabbi and a philosopher and a physician in Egypt, a Jew living in Egypt. He said, "May I never forget that the patient is a fellow creature in pain. May I never consider him merely a vessel of disease." It's easy to see how in this era of technology, the patient becomes a disease and no longer a person. The book is an attempt to remind people about that.
And I love that you've written this book. Now, what is the wedge that you've described that technology can drive between a doctor and a patient?
Well, you know, when a child comes with the diagnosis of a brain tumor, we often need surgery, one, to make a diagnosis, and two, to remove the tumor or as much of it as we safely can do. And there are many surgeons who are technically very gifted, but if they can't create a bond with the patient and the family, then they're not really healing the patient. We all want to give the patient good news, but the good news is not always there. The importance of the bedside bond between doctor and patient is to continue that so that the patient will want to return to the doctor no matter what the news. We want to share the good news and we want to share the difficult news. We want to continue that relationship. And it's important to do that because words can help heal. Words can't remove a tumor, but we can treat the disease with technology. We can heal the patient with a combination of technology and humanity.
I love that. And what exactly is being forgotten, the part that you call the art of humanity?
Simple things like optimism. You know, we can say if someone has sustained, say, a cervical spine injury and is paralyzed from the neck down, it could be truthful that you're probably never going to walk again. But another way to say it is that with a nuance, most people with this disorder won't walk again. We can be honest. It's compassionate honesty and hope. There's always a reason for hope, even if we can control pain with medication or if we can try a new treatment. And I think that's what is lost in this age of the business of medicine.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And you've spoken about the three H's, the humility, humanity, and humor. And you said that patients know instantly when those things are missing.
Yeah, I mean, the famous ball player Yogi Berra said that it ain't the heat, it's the humility. But humility is what's lost right now. And I think that's important. Humanity as well. Again, humanity is empathy or compassion. And empathy may be a hard word to describe, but patients and families know it when it's not there.
Back in 1927, Francis Weld Peabody, a professor of medicine at Harvard, told the graduating students that the art of caring is to care about the patient. And caring is sometimes a difficult word to understand. Albert Johnson, who is an ordained minister, not a physician, became the president of the University of California at San Francisco, said that caring means being troubled about someone else's trouble. And while caring and empathy may be difficult words to define, patients and families know it when it's not there. And it's a very important part of the art of healing.
Yes, that's true. And why do humility and humanity and humor matter so much in a moment of fear and crisis?
Well, humor helps heal. Humor is vitamin H. And it's a way to break down barriers, especially when you're dealing with children. Humor is vitamin H. The Old Testament said a merry heart heals like a medicine. And it's important not to forget that. So we can bond with children by lightening the atmosphere. And I think it not only relaxes the patient, but it helps the body, it helps the immune response, and it helps create that long-term bond between the doctor and the patient that tends to be forgotten.
I agree. And you've said that your patients, especially the children, have taught you more about the art of healing than any book could ever teach.
Yeah, that's very true. And not only that, but the kids can be resilient. And you can imagine how devastating it is for a family to learn that their precious child has been diagnosed with a brain tumor. And on more than one occasion, I've seen the strength of the child help the family get through the ordeal. These kids are courageous in their own way. And it's unbelievable, but it's important. And it's something that I've seen over the years. It's something that's always there.
Now, for the listeners out there, whatever you're walking through right now, this is a reminder of something that we all need, that kindness and human connection still matters, maybe more than ever. And follow the advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week, we bring you more voices reminding us what it means to heal, to hope, and to care for one another. Now, you've said something that moved me deeply, and that is that it's often the children, your youngest patients whose strength at the end up helping their entire family heal. You know, can you tell us more about that?
Families often want to protect their children from bad news. And in doing so, they sometimes hide information from the kids. And there's no one-size-fits-all way to deal with this. There's a balance between honesty and hope that has to be there at the bedside. It's different from everybody. One part of the art of medicine and the art of healing is to listen. Sometimes we spend a lot of time talking. There was a famous oncologist, Robert Buckman from Toronto, who said, before you talk, hear. And you want to hear what the patient wants to know, how much they want to know, what the child wants to know. Sometimes parents ask their kid to be outside the room, and the kid can be more frightened by that, or they're being whisked off to the operating room without knowing what's going on. Some kids want to know a lot, some kids want to know a little, but I think it's important to include the family as a whole in the diagnosis. And again, our goal is not to sugarcoat the information. It's to be honest, but compassionate honesty. That's what's important.
I agree so much. And, you know, I think sometimes people don't realize children are stronger than we think, you know, and we kind of underestimate their strength.
they've been through a lot, and they are stronger than we think. And again, they can sometimes be the anchor for the entire family.
Yes, I agree. Now, what have you witnessed in these brave kids facing the unimaginable?
I've seen their strength come through and help them. There was one of my patients, Emma, was a 9-year-old girl who collapsed in a pool, and she almost drowned. There was a lifeguard there who wasn't paying attention, and her mother had a camera, was taking pictures, and just happened to be taking a picture of her and saw her go underwater. And her mother jumped in the water with her clothes on and saved her kid's life. Turned out that this 9-year-old girl had a tumor in the center of her brain that caused her to have a seizure. And the seizure was what caused her to go under. She was resuscitated. Ultimately, we removed the tumor. It was an interhemispheric approach between the two hemispheres of the brain to take out the tumor in the center of the brain. And she required chemotherapy for 2 years. This is when she was 9 years old. And chemotherapy can have side effects, but she was stalwart, and she just beat this. And now she's 25 years later, she's an artist in her own right, and she's an advocate for cancer survivors. And it's the courage of the kid that got her family through the ordeal.
I love that. And is there another story, you know, one that you're able to share that captures this kind of courage and resilience, you know, that you've seen that stays with you to this day? Because I know people in our audience love to hear these type of stories.
One of the most powerful stories is about the courage of the family. And it was when I was in Boston, I got a phone call from a mother from out of state about her 2-month-old daughter. And Mom was a neurology, neurosurgery nurse. She was very bright. When she was pregnant, she had an ultrasound of the fetus, and it showed a giant malignant brain tumor filling the left hemisphere of the fetus's brain. And that continued to grow during the pregnancy. The fetus also had a disorder, Down syndrome, but a double hit with this malignant brain tumor. And the physicians, out of compassion, made a plan that when the child was born, they would bring the child home for hospice care. And mother prepared to bury her unborn child. When the child was born, she went home. And curiously, she didn't get worse. The tumor got bigger, but the child didn't get worse. And the parents actually took her to the ocean so she could feel the water in the sand, thinking that the next time they would be there would be to spread her ashes. And you can imagine, this mother wrote eloquently about what it was like to plan for her unborn child's death. She came up for another opinion. We said the child looked better than the scan. One of the things that a famous neurologist taught me, one of my teachers, was we treat the child, not the x-ray. We decided to take a look, and we operated. It was a big tumor, but it was not cancer. It was a benign tumor.
Wow.
Remove it. And the child now, 11 years later, is in the fifth grade with two boyfriends. And she had a birthday party when she was 1 year old that she never thought she would have. 100 people came there. They thought that the birthday party would never happen. So you never know with these things. And the courage of this mother and father to go through an ordeal like that, you can't imagine what it takes. And it's the resilience of the family in this case that was remarkable.
Wow, that's an amazing story. This message isn't only for doctors. I think it's for every single person listening that can take something from this. You know, for every day, you know, the everyday person, the one caring for a sick loved one or facing their own hard diagnosis or simply wanting to show up better for people they love, what can they learn from the art of comfort?
I think, the book is intended for the general public, but also for people in the field of medicine, including trainees. At my institution, there was a famous physician, William Osler, who founded the first residency in the country. He came to Johns Hopkins and opened Johns Hopkins in 1889. And he famously said that the good physician treats the disease, the great physician treats the patient who has the disease, and every patient is different. I think that's what the physicians and the families need to know. Every case is different. There's no one size fits all. There's a balance between honesty and hope, and that's different for every patient and every family.
I love that. And how can any of us bring more humanity, more presence and more comfort to the people around us, especially when they need it the most?
Well, sometimes when people learn that a friend or family member has a serious illness or a life-threatening illness, they're scared because they think they might say the wrong thing and upset the family. I think the important thing is not what one says, but just being there, having the presence and being there to support. And it means the world to the families. One of the most emotionally draining things that happens to me is every time I finish a long operation and go to the waiting room to give the patients news, everybody cries, whether it's good news or bad news, everybody, because it's a big emotional release. But a lot of people have family to support them. And I think that's very helpful, not to worry about saying the wrong thing, but just be there and be yourself.
I agree 100%. And what really made you motivated to want to write this book?
Over the years I've written for the medical profession, I've kept a diary. So some of these cases are very interesting and dramatic. And it was an attempt to share with the world what we do in neurosurgery. When I was in medical school, I didn't know there was such a thing as a pediatric neurosurgeon. And it's changed my life. It's been a great ride for me. I wanted to show and share some of the impact that we deal with on a daily basis, which is much more powerful than anything you could see on a television screen. The emotions up and down. As a pediatric neurosurgeon, we are very, very involved with the family. We become really a member of the family. And there's nothing more rewarding than to be able to see my patients grow up and have kids of their own and come back. So it's something to share with the general public that they may not be aware of.
And what is the biggest thing that you're hoping to accomplish from this book?
I think to tell the story, to tell the dramatic stories of each case, but also to showcase the nervous system. You know, the nervous system, the brain is probably the most complex item in the entire universe that we know of, and it's formidable and scary. But by knowing some neuroanatomy, we are able to diagnose conditions with physical diagnosis and a bedside history and exam. You know, we have a barrage of tests we do now with an MRI of the whole body and a lot of blood tests, and sometimes we're overwhelmed by information. But a doctor at the bedside with a good history and physical exam can cut through a lot of that. And to show what we can diagnose and what we can do with technology, and also how its synergy with humanity will help heal the patient and the family.
I love that. I love that. And where can people find your book?
Well, the book is on Amazon. It's in some of the bookstores.
Is there a website they can go to or some way that they could follow you?
I have a website. It's dralanrcohen.com. You can Google me. I'm at the hospital usually 23 of the 24 hours a day. It's getting old.
And also, you have saved children's lives. You sat with the families in the hardest moments imaginable. And after all of it, you've chose to write this book, not about surgery, but about healing the human spirit. So when you strip everything else away, like, what do you most want people to understand about what it truly means to heal and to comfort?
One of the things is that this is not a book about me. It's about stories that I've lived through, but I work with a team. I work with a team of neurosurgeons. I work with a team of neurologists and intensive care doctors and nurses and therapists and child care specialists as well. This is a team effort. Our goal is to get the child safely and quickly back to the family and back to the life of being a child. And that's what I wanted to showcase, what we do here in neurosurgery.
I love that. I love that. And from our conversation today, if you could take away, you know, two or three things that you'd like to share with the audience that you want them to remember, you know, what would those two or three things be?
Well, I think this is a book for people who have faced serious illness or have friends or family who have faced serious illness. It's a devastating diagnosis, a childhood brain tumor, but this is intended for people who've faced other serious illnesses, to remember that technology is available and humanity is available, and the synergy of technology and humanity. Technology treats the disease, humanity heals the patient, and that we've been able to do a lot more lately with technology, and to not forget that the doctor is also a person and the patient is also a person, and remember that bond between the doctor and the patient.
I love that. I love that. And for the listeners out there, in a world racing toward more than technology, more speed and machines, today's guest reminded us that one something that was timeless, what it is to be treated as a human being, to be comforted, to be given hope. And, you know, Dr. Allen, you know, you spent a lifetime at the, you know, very frontier of medicine, and all your messages to all of us is profoundly simple, never, you know, never forgotten, because the power of kindness, presence, and comfort, you know, you exemplify through your own actions of who you are today. And I just want to thank you so much for being here and for this beautiful reminder. You know, I really thank you for, you know, being able to share all these beautiful things with us. I think, you know, if anything, that, you know, people who are doctors who are listening or people in the medical field, remember that the act of kindness is so important, and that we all should share, you know, and give kindness and comfort, and especially even people, the families, you know, one person shares love and kindness, and if that person does it, and then the next person, imagine how wonderful the world could be, and imagine how much we could help other human beings if we all exemplify that behavior.
Yeah, I hope people will come away remembering that hope helps healing, and that this is a book about celebrating life and postponing death, and resurrecting this forgotten art of healing in the modern age of technology.
Yes, and that's a very good point. I think, you know, today we're so absorbed with technology and all the different things that are coming out that we need to stop for a second and really think about what really matters. And, you know, hope, love, caring for others, you know, showing empathy. These are the things that help strengthen people. And the act of humor, like you mentioned, you know, they always said, you know, medicine is, you know, humor is your best medicine, they would say. And, you know, I really love what you had to share today. And I thank you so much for doing what you're doing, for all the lives that you save, for everything that you've done in the course of your career. I just want to say thank you, you know, for everything you've done.
Very kind. You know, that reminds me that the famous philosopher Voltaire, many centuries ago, said that the art of medicine is in entertaining the patient while nature cures the disease. So humor does have a role still in
yes.
The art of healing.
It really does. It really does. Well, once again, before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation?
No, thank you very much for having me. And if you're interested in the book, I hope you enjoy it.
Well, thank you. And you can find it on Amazon. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk about this wonderful topic and to share your book with everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.